Good morning and welcome back to Nachyami. We are learning today Divrei Yamim Beis, Perek Ches, the 8th chapter of the 2nd book of Divrei Yamim. Our parallel parsha is to be found in Melachim Aleph Perek Tes, from Sukkim Yud to Chav Ches, and this Perek here in Divrei Yamim has 18 Sukkim. The general topic is the years of prosperity of Shlomo. We hear about expansion, we hear about success, and Shlomo Melech is really settling down as an icon, as a king in the Middle East and beyond. So the first two psukim, we hear about the settling of certain Canaanite cities. After 20 years, Shlomo Melech building the Beis Hashem and Beis Soi. So he builds the palace of Hashem for 7 years, 13 years he builds his own palace. And we hear about the cities which Hiram, the king of Tyre, gives to Shlomo, and Shlomo Melech built them and settled down Israel in them. Now, just stopping there for just a moment, if you contrast this to Melachim Aleph Perek Tes, you'll notice that it talks about Shlomo Melech giving cities to Hiram. Here it talks about Hiram giving the cities to Shlomo. So which is it? How does this work? So the Chiddush suggests there was an interchange. This was barter. This was to show their degree of alliance, to show that they trusted each other. They were ultimately supplying each other and exchanging cities. That's the way the Chiddush understands it, the way the Radak understands it. The Malbim says that it was a little more complex than that. That remember that Shlomo Melech had promised Hiram that in return for all the suppliers and artisans that he'd be sending to Shlomo, to Israel, he would in turn give them a product that which they needed, grain, oil, wine, all those things which they needed from the pastures. So what the Shlomo Melech proposed was to give Hiram 20 cities that would ultimately Hiram would use and produce using those cities the necessary payment for the supplies to the Beis HaMikdash. However, if you look in Sefer Melachim, you see that Hiram was upset. He says that the land was not fertile enough, and he returned them to Shlomo. And ultimately, as we hear in Divrei Yamim here, Shlomo Melech settled down Israel in them, cultivated them, and produced the necessary grain, oil, and wine that was going to be sent up to Hiram. So there was sort of the backwards and forwards here was not an interchange, it was rather actually a negotiation. Again, it's just fascinating to notice that here the nation of Israel is being used as agricultural engineers when the other nations, the Phoenicians, do not feel that it is good. This is reminiscent to what we see today, where Israel is exporting agricultural know-how to the rest of the world, and where other people perhaps may have given up, that's where Israel steps in. We now move into Sukkim Gimel to Vav, where we hear about the conquests of Shlomo. So we hear about him conquering Hamas Tzova, that's somewhere near the Aleppo area. We hear about building Tadmor in the desert, and all the storehouses which are surrounding it. We hear him building Beit Churun HaElyon and Beit Churun HaTachton. We hear about the refuge cities, which are walled. We hear about Baalot, which he captures in all their warehouses. So we hear about a great amount of conquest. So the Malbim points out that in Melachim Aleph, we hear about some cities which he conquers, and here Ezra adds in the others. So again, both Divrei Yamim and Melachim are giving us a more fuller perspective when putting the two together. The next thing that's just important just to notice, where are these cities? So Tadmor is generally associated with the city of Palmyra, which is in central Syria. So we're talking about pretty far north. It's further than Damascus. And it's probably, you will remember the name because it hit the news when ISIS captured it and started destroying the old pagan temples that used to be there. So that's Palmyra, which is Tadmor, which is Shlomo Melech built up. And also perhaps Baalat could be associated with Baalbek, which is a city in northeast of Beirut. It's in what is today in Lebanon, what we know today, is called Heliopolis in the times of the Greeks. So these are important cities. You just get a sense of how far-reaching the kingdom of Shlomo really was. Then we hear about Psukim Zion to Yud, where we hear about the taxpayers. So it describes that all the remaining children of the original Canaanite nations, Shlomo Melech takes them and puts a tax on them. Vayalem Shlomo Lamas. And the children of Israel were not included in this. Kihema anshei milchama v'sari shalishav, they were the people of the war. So what does that mean? So the way it's understood is, the Metzudas explains this, the Ralbag explains it this way, is that the tax is not that he got money from them, but rather he put them to work. They became that strata in society, which were builders. They were the people who owed it to society, that needed to, so to speak, were the builders of the society. And the Israelites were not subject to that same level of conscription. Their conscription was related to the army. So Israelites went to the army, and Canaanites who lived among them, who had not converted to being monotheist, remained as workers in the workforce. That's what's being described over here. We now move on to Pasuk Yud Aleph, which stands by itself, where we hear about Shlomo Melech making a palace for the daughter of Pharaoh, Bas Parah, who is his wife. This is seemingly a political marriage. And he says the reason over here is, Lo yaseh shev isha li beveis David, this woman should not stay in the house of David, Melech Yisrael, ki koyde shema, ashebo alehem aron Hashem, the Ark of the Covenant came to the house of David, and she should not be there. This is fascinating because, as the Malbim points out, that in the Sefer Melachim, it sounds like he makes her own palace when he's making his palace. And one may come to the conclusion that the reason he's doing this is because she's so special or she wields some sort of power over him. But the truth be told is that Shlomo Melech is walking a tightrope over here. On the one hand, he wants her to feel that she's special, so he makes her own palace to her. But really, the intent that Ezra explains in retroactively in history is because he wanted her at an arm's length, at a distance. So this is a very difficult balance. This is obviously a political marriage to have peace on the southern border with Egypt, but it comes at a cost, and that cost has to be very finely and carefully managed. It is already a hairline fracture for later unfortunate events. And then we hear about the actual regular service in the Beis Hamikdash from Pesukim Yud Beis to Tezayin, and we hear about how Shlomo Melech brings out these olos in front of the Ulam, in front of the temple, Devar Yom B'Yom, every day. So that's referring to the Korban Tamid, Shabbosos, Chadoshim, Moados, so on Shabbos, on Chorosh Chodesh, and Moed. Then we hear about the Korbanos, which are being set up, and it's Shlomo Melech now keeps the structures that David HaMelech set up of all the Machlakos. That means to say, all the different sections of the Kohanim, the 24 sections of the Levium, everything as David HaMelech set it up, Shlomo Melech is adopting and continuing. Amazing that David HaMelech was able to create in such a way, and it's called the idea of the Mitzvah HaMelech, the way of the command of the king to do this as well. And there's a curious pasuk at the end here in Tes Zayin, where it says, "Atikon kol Melech Shlomo," all the work of Shlomo Melech was established, Ad Hayom, till the day, Musad Beis Hashem Vad Kolosoy Shilam, Shalem Beis Hashem, until the day the house was created and completed. So what does it mean, Ad Hayom? So Rashi understands, and the Malbim understands it, that it means same Yom Hivastar Ad Kolosoy, from the day it was established until it was finished. Very ambiguous as to what does it mean. Does it mean to say the finishing of the building or the finishing of the house being in operation? The Ralbag says, perhaps, is if you look at the next two psukim, the last two psukim of the section, which talk about further expansions of territory of Shlomo HaMelech, maybe it refers that to the idea that until the point that Shlomo HaMelech became this global power, then it was more in its greatest way of operating. But once he started becoming this iconic figure and spreading out to becoming this trader with the whole Middle East and beyond, that's when it became less of Al-Mechonoi on the way that it should have been. That's what Ralbag suggests over here. And that leads us to the last part of the perek, last two psukim, about Shlomo Melech conquering Etzion Gover and Eilot, which are on the edge of the sea. And he then, Huram, who is his Phoenician trade partner, sends him boats, and because they know the sea, the Phoenicians are traders on the Mediterranean, and they sent to Ophir, and they got a huge amount of gold to Shlomo, which was brought back to the chambers. So what is Eilot and Etzion Gover? Well, Eilot sounds familiar, doesn't it? Yes, that's because it is what we call today Eilat. It is the coastal city, the port on the south, which gives access to the Red Sea, ultimately giving trade to the east coast of Africa and the west coast of Arabia. So that's a very important conquest. It's going to now open trade routes which the Phoenicians do not have open to them, because remember, at this point there's no Suez Canal, and therefore the Phoenicians control all the Mediterranean trade. So the fact that Shlomo Melech has now a relationship with Hiram is going to be very helpful for both of them, because now they're going to have access to another sea in the south as well. Where is Ophir that they're getting all this gold for? So it's unidentified. It's not so easy to understand where this is, but there are suggestions that whether it could be on the Saudi or the Arabian Peninsula on the east, or it could actually be the Horn of Africa, perhaps Ethiopia. We hear about in Melachim him bringing back all kinds of things, ivory, monkeys, peacocks, all kinds of things, algum wood, which was brought back to Israel through this trade. And this is a really important port, although it wasn't part of the promised land per se, meaning to say Eilat was not part of the original promise, this particular port. It remains incredibly important. If Naomi Shemer, in her poem called Machar, and this is the refrain, beautiful, beautiful refrain, is Machar ulai nafliga basinot, tomorrow maybe we'll go out in the boats. Mechof Eilat ad Chof Nishinhav, Shenhav from the port of Eilat till Shenhav ad Mishma'al Hamash Chatzot Yeshanot Yatinu Tapuzei Zahav. And perhaps we'll be able to bring back the Tapuchei Zahav, the golden apples, which refer to the oranges of Eilat being exported out of Israel. Because remember that when Egypt kept on threatening numerous times until the final closing of the Straits of Tiran, therefore closing access to Israeli shipping, it closed off all that trade. It's an incredibly essential part of the development of Israel, and this is an incredible development in Shlomo Melech's kingdom. Now he's trading north, south, east, west, and he is a known figure. This leads to the next step, which is Malkas Sheva, the Queen of Sheba, because she comes from this area. This is Shlomo becoming international, but remembering the Ralbag's comment that perhaps as he stretched himself outwards, inwards perhaps became somewhat compromised. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.